You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR. Now here are your hosts, Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm.
Yeah, we know we're up.
That's right.
Can we just soak it in, bro?
Hello
there, everybody.
There.
Oh, you, took
oh,
I
you
never
did
tell.
It. Oh, God. Do it again.
No.
Do it again.
No. Go ahead.
Hello there. Welcome to Tuesday of week number 5 in the National Football League. The Minnesota Vikings remain undefeated last night. The Giants looked awful in that game.
They
if
did
I
look awful.
I say so myself.
I'm in my former player fantasy league. I'm looking to dump Eli Manning. That entire, and here's the one thing that I as bad as the Giants looked last night, even further than being bad, the one thing that I thought they looked like on both sides of the football was scared. The Giants offense to me looks scared.
Yeah.
I mean, the one time they throw, at least what I was watching, the one time they throw the football down the field, it's picked off. You know, late in that football game,
yep.
You know, the overthrow of Odell Beckham, and it looks like
kind of like quit his route.
He just quit his route. I mean, Odell Beckham Jr. I don't get many opportunities to, you know, or I actually don't. I choose not to watch them, or they're not on an awful lot. As I'm not much of an Eli Manning fan at all. Just to me, he's Jarvis Landry, and I know that they play together. They came from the same school. He's same hair.
I
just think, but here's the difference is, and I guess I'm not coming from a fantasy world. If I were building an NFL roster, based on their personalities and their production through 2 seasons and 4 football games, I'd choose Jarvis Landry over Odell Beckham Jr. because of, I don't want the hoopla. I don't want the crybaby. I don't want the comments. You're 5'9", 205 pounds. Okay. You're not intimidating. Whatever you shave into your head in the back and the blonde on top, not intimidating. It might be great for Head and Shoulders commercials, but it's not intimidating. So,
and he's just becoming a distraction, I think.
He is.
He's becoming a distraction. He's becoming, you want to not use the word liability, but he's kind of starting to cross over to the almost too bizarre phase and almost destructive. And Eli Manning called him out yesterday. When he said, you know, it's all about everybody, it's all eyes on me now, it's me against the world. And he's like, well, you made yourself the public enemy.
Yeah, the same day that Dez Bryant, who's, of course, injured for the next couple of weeks with that knee injury or ankle injury, whatever it is, says that I'm the most hated in America, Odell Beckham Jr. goes out and has that performance and those theatrics on Monday Night Football, and he might have just taken the crown from Dez.
Yeah, it's... ugly performance there, but the Vikings, first of all, their building is awesome. When you had Randy Moss blowing on the Viking horn to kick it, awesome. A cool
Dude,
environment. I can't wait to go there.
That defense
is good.
Is something serious.
They're everywhere. It seems like there's 5 guys wherever the ball is.
And the funny thing to me is, and I know that there was, I think it was on ESPN.com, it was like the 3-year construction of the Minnesota Vikings. And I think it's very relevant from a building standpoint. And everyone goes about their business different. And yes, they've had, you know, their quarterback Teddy Bridgewater go down and trading for Sam Bradford, Adrian Peterson getting hurt. They're 4-0, by the way. But dive into that article and just look at how sometimes people criticize not drafting, you know, the sexy wide receiver or going, you know, running back, knowing that Adrian Peterson eventually is going to fizzle out, you know, reaching
sure.
the age of 30, but yet going, you know, defense with Anthony Barr and Kendricks, and you go with Trey Waynes, and you just build and build and build. You don't need the guys necessarily to go out and play right now, but then as they grow and they get an opportunity to learn what the NFL game is really all about, they all fire at the same time. You got Diggs playing well.
Yep.
You know, you got Kyle Rudolph playing well. I mean, Sam Bradford's not playing absolutely lights out amazing like we all thought he would coming out of Oklahoma. He's doing everything he has to do to allow that team to win football games and not screw it up.
And hey, by newsflash, if you're playing against the Minnesota Vikings, third down comes up, might want to cover Kyle Rudolph. Might want maybe a good idea. Giants didn't seem to get that.
I reevaluate our schedule and thinking like, oh yeah, the Giants are going to be running hot. They're going to be in the, you know, in their division mix. They, again, you open up with it. They stink. The Cleveland Browns playing well and playing a good solid football game. Corey Coleman healthy, Terrell Pryor healthy. Who knows Kessler, McCown, RG3? I don't care. Isaiah Crowell running the way he is. Duke Johnson stepping his game up can beat that football team.
You would think
so. The one thing we can get open against their DBs because they stink. Janoris Jenkins, shove us at the line of scrimmage, and then we'll run away from you all day long because that seems like what every wide receiver did against him last night.
Absolutely. Let's go. Giddy up for the Browns. Some news today. Connor Hamlett promoted to the active roster, to the active 53-man roster to make room for him. The team has waived Don Jones, who's really just a special teams contributor. Hamlett, the tight end, who was so good early in training camp in Berea, made this team's practice squad, now on the active roster. Why? Let's not forget Seth DeValve is banged up again, as is Randall Telfer, who has a high ankle sprain. So they needed a second tight end on this roster, and Connor Hamlett is going to be that guy. No word yet on Austin Ryder officially being placed on injured reserve, but you'd expect the team to probably sign a true center in the meantime. Or maybe they're comfortable with Greco now that Alvin Bailey is back, and the new depth chart that was just released, John Greco is the number one center, Alvin Bailey back to being the number one right guard.
Sure, and also take into account that today is an off day. And when do scouts and coaches have the opportunity to evaluate prospects, you know, that are essentially on the streets right now and have them come in for a workout? That's right now. That's happening right now. So I wouldn't be surprised, as you said, if there is something out there that the Cleveland Browns like and want to sign to the active roster or potentially move things around with their practice squad, so on and so forth. It could happen probably from 3 to 7 o'clock tonight as they have an opportunity to evaluate these guys on the field performances during their workouts here in Berea. And then they meet about it and they make a move to get that guy signed so that he gets situated here to come in and start practicing tomorrow.
Yes, get him in. Get him ready to go for this game against the New England Patriots. The Patriots, of course, Tom Brady back in the mix for
who?
The Patriots. Exactly. Who? Tom Brady back in the mix for the Patriots. It is going to be one of those games where I was asked today, the Browns have a chance. Of course the Browns have a chance. The Browns have been competitive in every game this year. Anything can happen on any given Sunday. And it just seems to me that it's not that often when everybody is 100% convinced that it's going to be like a 40-point blowout. It rarely happens that way.
I don't think it's going to be that easy. And I said it yesterday kind of in a break, and I have a feeling that the Cleveland Browns are going to play the New England Patriots the way that they've played the last three football games, meaning play them tough for a half, dig into the third, you know, get into the third quarter, and maybe even start the fourth quarter within, you know, shooting distance, killing distance, meaning they're up by three, we're up by three, and it's going to come down to the fourth quarter. It is. Because I don't necessarily believe that this Patriots team is beat up a little bit. They're getting Tom Brady back at the right time. He's their leader. I think they're going to have a lot of energy centered around this practice week with Tom Brady in the building. It's going to feel different. It has to feel different. Just, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, there's an energy loss from Brady to Garoppolo, Garoppolo then down to Jacoby Brissett.
Sure.
That's just natural in every building. Same thing to be said from RG3 to McCown, McCown to Kessler. And I think there's going to take some getting used to in that building, having Brady back, the accountability, practicing at a different tempo. I think they're going to come out fast. And I think the Cleveland Browns, as we did against the Washington Redskins, you know, they go up 14-0 very quickly, weather the storm and make it a football game, and we settle in. And I think maybe in some cases you see a little bit of the rust centered around Tom Brady not having played football in 4 weeks.
You hope that's there. You hope that maybe he got a little bit of too much pasta in his belly and his trips around Italy and in Europe and too much wine, and maybe he's not as focused. And, you know, Bill Simmons made a very interesting point about it on Any Given Wednesday, which I thought was a very good one.
But today's Tuesday.
I know, but it was on last week's Any Given Wednesday. And that was this, that he said, you know, when I got suspended from ESPN, Simmons talking about himself, when he got suspended from ESPN, he's like, you're forced to get out of the rat race for a second, and you realize what a great life there is out there.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
And he's like, there's a reason that I've stopped writing so many columns, and there's a reason that things have changed for me. Obviously, he moved to HBO, but he said, you get a taste of that. He goes, look at Sean Payton, the year that he was suspended with New Orleans. Have the Saints ever been the same after that?
Nope.
No, you get a taste of real life, and Maybe instead of working that hard, you decide, I'm going to do this and I can do both. And his concern with Tom Brady in that suspension period is that, you know, when has Tom Brady gotten to do that in a September?
Never.
Never. I mean, literally, when was the last time he did that in a September? Was he 10?
Yeah. Probably 13.
Okay, 13. And he probably enjoyed it. I bet he enjoyed the heck out of it.
25 years ago.
Yeah. For the first time he's been, I bet he enjoyed the heck out of it. So he's worried that he's going to come back and be soft and not have that same fire.
The killer instinct. And that just goes to show, I mean, going back to, you know, post-Miami, and speaking of Cody Parkey, you know, different aspects of their career, different places in their career. Cody Parkey's still a young football player with, you know, many years to potentially kick in the National Football League, but it's kicking for the Eagles, going to a Pro Bowl, missing all of last year with an injury, and then not making a camp this year. There's complacency, whereas, you know, Brady's out there throwing every day, you know, with his guys and the Patriots holding him accountable to structure and working on his craft. There's an edge that develops, and that edge continues to get sharp by doing that every single day, repeatedly over and over and over and over again. I would imagine that Cody Parkey wasn't kicking as much as he would have been had he been with an NFL football team. Okay.
Right.
And it's those little things that start that slip through the cracks when you get the phone call, you start to creep in. Wait, man, I didn't even kick Wednesday or Thursday, and yet I get a call on Friday, which you never know when that call is going to come, and boom, I got to go kick 6 field goals in an NFL football game. And as you mentioned, Tom Brady traveling all over the world, probably really diving into his kids, which is one thing that I love doing post-career is just getting enamored and not saying you're not in love with them, but falling in love with your wife all over again, falling in love with your kids all over again, and digging into what makes them tick when football for Tom Brady for the longest time is what makes him tick. At least, you know, our perspective as outsiders without knowing his personal life. It's Tom Brady, the quarterback, Tom Brady, the superstar, Tom Brady that's married to the model. It's this lavish lifestyle that's all centered around his success on the football field. Well, he hasn't had that for 4 weeks, and a lot has changed.
And he hasn't even been in the building.
Correct. And your priorities start to shift where it's, I want to put my kid to bed at night, you know, and read them a book because I've been doing it for the last 4 weeks. When Tom Brady of old was, honey, put the kids to bed, or nanny put the kids to bed. I'm going to go down to my film room, and I'm going to go watch film, and I'm going to dive in, or I'm going to have Wes Welker over, or Julian's going to be pulling up to the house, and we're going to go watch some film, and his house is going to be so big, they probably run routes in his basement for all we know. You know, little things like that start to creep out of his life, A, because, you know, of where he's at with his wife and children and so on and so forth, but having the opportunity for those last 4 weeks to do other things, those other things, at least at this point right now, that could all shift in the next 3 weeks, which who cares? It's not relevant to us. But right now, we hope some of those things have taken over.
Just for the first week back.
Just for the first week back and really keep him unsettled in regards to getting back into that pocket.
Yeah, and there's nothing he can do to replicate the timing of an actual NFL game. The timing of a pass rush, the getting hit, because he hasn't even been allowed to practice. For the Browns, at least Josh Gordon was here, could go through the practice scripts.
Well, it's not like Tom Brady was getting hit in training camp either.
No, not at all. But just
maybe with a pad or something.
Being around there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, we'll see. We're hoping. That's some hopeful stuff there. On today's show coming up, we've got Sir Andrew Gribble at 1:30. John Costco, the analyst and Browns media correspondent for Pro Football Focus, with his segment every day at 2. Terrell Pryor, we'll hear from him in the second hour. We've got After Further Reviews. We go around the league. And also, today we want to talk about, in the Ohio Business Machine Hot Topic, we're a quarter of the way through the season, believe it or not. So give us your Browns awards for the following: MVP, best rookie, and the player that has surprised you the most here in 2016. I think that there are going to be a lot of different answers for all of those questions. For MVP, I think you could go a lot of different ways. For best rookie, I think you could go a lot of different ways. And the biggest surprise, I think you could go for a lot of different ways. There have been, in those categories, because I don't think there's a clear MVP, at least in my mind. I'm trying to rack my brain about rookie. I could name a couple of guys that have stood out to me. And then the player that surprised the most, I mean, there are tons of nominees for that. But we want your answers. 216-578-0850. Call us up here on this Tuesday. Connor Hamlett on the 53-man roster. Don Jones waived. That's the roster move today. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Zagura and Wilhelm on CBD.
listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm with you here in the Dog Bowl in Berea, getting you ready for week number 5, the Browns and the Patriots. Some guy goes, what is this, the comedy hour? Brady should just stay home. First of all, that was Bill Simmons, who's the biggest Patriots fan in the world. That was his theory, which I shared, and I think I stated that clearly. Didn't I say Bill Simmons said this on any given Wednesday? I'm just hopeful. I'm hopeful. The only thing I'm hopeful about is typically.
We're just going to show up on Sunday and get boat raced, and it's not worth. No, why would we do that?
No. Look, you want to be competitive in this game. I think being competitive in this game and giving yourself a chance at some point in this game to pull it out would be a big win for this team. Yes, is the possibility the Patriots come out and do what the Patriots have done to very good teams in the NFL, like the Houston Texans on a Thursday night, and blast them? Of course that's possible. The Patriots are that good. Tom Brady is that motivated. I imagine this game, in their minds, is going to be one giant middle finger to Roger Goodell.
Yes.
That's what they're going for. So that doesn't typically – they typically have some success with that. So, yeah, we'll see what happens there. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. By the way, Dog Pound, through the Cleveland Browns Foundation 50-50 raffle, lucky fans in attendance can enter to win big at Browns home games this year and make a difference in the lives of Cleveland's youth. Raffle tickets can be purchased at First Energy Stadium through your smartphone, on the Browns mobile app, or at kiosk locations. Don't miss this chance to support your Cleveland Browns Foundation and shoes and clothes for kids. Go Browns. All right, when we look at this, Matt Wilhelm, when we look at this team and we go through those three categories for our Ohio Business Machines Hot Topic section. We'll get to that in a second. Again, it's the awards. MVP through the quarter, a rookie of the year, and the biggest surprise. We'll get those in a second. We'll go to the phone now. We got Josh in Cleveland with us. Josh, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
You got
my
it,
MVP is Terrell Fryer.
Okay.
My rookie of the year will go to Derek Kindred. And my biggest surprise would be Cody Kessler.
So two rookies there, Cody Kessler and Derek Kindred making the list. Terrell Pryor as your MVP. And again, Terrell Pryor, I think you could make him – he could be your MVP. He could be your biggest surprise of the year. Kindred's certainly one of the guys who's emerged and in the running for the Rookie of the Year. Cody Kessler, you could make the case that he's in the running for Rookie of the Year. And also he's been a surprise, and Kindred's been a surprise. So obviously a lot of stuff going on with those guys. But Matt, let's get into it. And Josh, appreciate the call. Some of the other options and some of the other ones that people have said coming in here on this. Let's see if I can pull them up here. My mentions aren't loading currently, so I'll get out of there for a second. But, you know, Terrell Pryor, what award is there for the Browns that Terrell Pryor couldn't win right now? I mean, there really is.
Rookie of the year.
That's it.
Because he's not a rookie.
Correct. Although, I mean, in reality, in some ways, as a wide receiver, he is a rookie.
Sure.
In some ways.
Okay, so I'm going to give Fryer to all three then.
No.
Okay.
All right, so MVP, let's start there.
I'll go MVP with my vote. And I think it's Isaiah Crowell. I don't believe you can give it to anyone else because I think that while we've leaned on Cody Kessler, Josh McCown, RG3 in these football games to throw the football, and Terrell Pryor has showed up in different roles in every football game, I think that if you have to go into these football games with Duke Johnson and or George Atkinson or Malcolm Johnson, our success on the ground game and our success offensively significantly changes. So I think Crowell is extremely valuable to us at this point right now.
He's been huge. We're the number one running offense in the National Football League. Crow, the number two rusher behind only Ezekiel Elliott. Mike Klebo tweets us. He says, Crow for MVP, Ogba for rookie, Kessler for the biggest surprise. Our guy Brad Sulberger from down in Florida, MVP Crow, rookie Kessler, surprised Pryor. We've got a couple other ones here. Andy Bowman says, biggest surprise is Terrell Pryor. Best rookie is yet to be determined, but there are many good ones, which is good to see. Josh Waymeyer says, MVP Pryor, rookie Derek Kindred, surprise Kessler. We just got a call from Josh in Cleveland. I wonder if that was the same guy. We have the same list there as well. I think that's it. I think those are the ones. Oh, and Derek Sparks also has MVP Crow, best rookie NASA, biggest surprise Kessler and Pryor. For me, I believe, you know, that Isaiah Crowell, like you, is the MVP of this team because it's the ground game that is keeping this offense going. Terrell Pryor certainly was in the conversation for me at MVP. And you know who else was? Joel Bitonio. I think he's playing phenomenal football, and his pulling from the left side has been a big part of the ground game success. I think he's played very well. You know, defensively, I think Christian Kirksey is really coming into his own. I think Stephen Paya has been phenomenal since coming here. But they're not MVPs.
They're not MVPs. They're not surprise. I mean, they're not surprises.
Well, Paya's a little bit of a surprise. He's been very good. Danny Shelton has been a very pleasant surprise this year, I would say, compared to what maybe people were expecting, especially after the preseason, which seemed to be a little bit rough. But Crow, I think, is the MVP of this team right now, looking like one of the top running backs in the NFL. He's, in fact, Pro Football Focus's number one overall graded running back thus far in the 2016 season. We'll get into the biggest, best rookie and the surprise after we talk to Ross in Worcester. Ross, welcome.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I got to say that Crow is probably the biggest surprise, and that's because my MVP is that offensive line. With Greco going to center, I think that was the best move, getting rid of Cam Irvin.
I think that's going to – if they continue to have success, you know, with the Greco-Bailey combination there, what do you do if you're Hugh Jackson when Cam Irvin comes back?
Keep him where he's at, on the sideline.
And you think that – does he need –
the same can be said. I mean, if Cody Kessler puts us in situations to win, let me create a scenario. If RG3's injury is 4 to 6 weeks from this point right now, same as Josh McCown, and Cody Kessler puts us in every football game, yet as a rookie, and we win two or three, you know, of those four or six, do you at that point go back to RG3 or Josh McCown, or do you continue to play Cody Kessler? Where he's, again, you're not getting blown out. He's taking the steps. He's part of your future. He's won some football games. What would be the advantage of this football team to start a guy like Josh McCown or Robert Griffin III again?
I don't think it is, and I was asked that on Baskin and Phelps earlier today. They had me because I do every Tuesday, and that's what they asked. You know, same thing. And to me, you know, what you're trying to find out from RG3 is, can he be your franchise quarterback? I think you have that answer. No, because you can't count on him to be that guy.
Right,
because ability is one of availability is a important ability, and you just know that you can't count on that. Josh McCown, his future's not here. If Cody Kessler can continue to keep you competitive, because my big concern was, would he stunt the development? Well, clearly Terrell Pryor is continuing to develop. Crow and Duke are continuing to develop with Cody Kessler at quarterback, so there's no issue with that, at least thus far. If that's the case, I think you absolutely continue to go with him there. I'll add another category, most improved player. And again, I think that you could nominate a bunch of people for the most improved player. But so we had MVP there. Most impressive rookie so far, I'm going to still stick with Corey Coleman. I think that, you know, 100-yard game, two touchdowns in his second NFL game against the Baltimore Ravens, balled out in a big way. We saw it all offseason before he hurt that hammy. But for him to come in, that was a real impactful game, and that was hopefully a harbinger of things to come for Corey Coleman. We want to get him back on the field. But I think he is the best rookie on this team. Kindred has played the most. Cody Kessler, I think you could even talk about because he's played well. Nassib. Agba's been out there, but hasn't made the impact yet.
Right. And for me, I concur. I was going to go Corey Coleman, even though he's only played in one football game, because in that football game, he kept us in the football game. And I think that's something that we have to take into account is, and I know I use the analogy a lot, but it's the bullets in the gun. Corey Coleman is a big bullet for us. And that's what, you know, some optimism surrounding our football team is, you know, going into these last two games with the weapons that we have and to be in those games. And now I'm not trying to say that Washington or Miami are playoff football teams. I don't believe that either of them are. But with Corey Coleman, how different is that game? You know,
totally.
Maybe Corey Coleman gets Josh Norman, and that puts, you know, Terrell Pryor working on their number two or number three corner in certain situations, bodying them. You know, and there's just something about having a dual threat that Corey Coleman brings opposite Terrell Pryor that gives you optimism that Cody Kessler's going to deliver the football accurately to them, and they're going to make a play.
Yeah, and you saw on Cody Kessler, you know, on Coleman's two touchdowns. One was a deep bomb, and another one he just took a pass at the line of scrimmage, made a guy miss, got in the end zone for the touchdown, his second of the day in that game against the Ravens. And, yes, we want to see him back out here as soon as possible. So, again, give us your Browns MVP through the quarter, the rookie of the year through the quarter, and, of course, the guy who has been the biggest surprise to you and also most improved. So four categories, most improved, MVP, rookie of the year, and biggest surprise. Our guy Kevin Beard says MVP Crow, rookie Cody Kessler, surprise Terrell Pryor, Xavier Galindez, most improved player. He says Danny Shelton and Christian Kirksey, MVP Crow, Nassib, rookie surprise Pryor, Johnny Ohio, MVP Crow, rookie Coleman. And the big surprise has been the DB's five interceptions so far for the Browns secondary. All right, we'll be back with more CBD and Sir Andrew Gribble Tuesdays with Gribbs right after this.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Skura, Matt Wilhelm, joined in the Dog Bowl by Sir Andrew Gribble. Getting grilled, P3. It's the original protein. Gribbs, how are you?
Doing great. What's going on?
It's great to have you here on this Tuesday.
Is this my cup? That's a first.
Yeah, man. We got prepared.
I had to lose
this.
The headphones, though, because it was just blasting in my ears. Though. So they, I'm going sans headphones here.
That's fine. That's fine, Grips. That's fine. If we get any callers, we'll relay what they have to say to you. 216-578-0850 if you want to call up and chat with us along with Sir Andrew. All right, Grips, quarter of the way through the season. We're talking Browns MVP, biggest surprise, rookie of the year, and most improved player in those categories. Who are the award winners for Sir Andrew Gribble? Start with MVP.
MVP.
We both went, just for full disclosure, we had both gone Isaiah Crowell.
Interesting. That's tough because my initial reaction, and maybe this is just a reaction from one game. Is it Terrell Pryor? I mean, for what?
He was in the discussion.
We have the surprise of the year.
Okay. Well, no, I might have a different one for
surprise rookie, and MVP.
Yeah, I think the MVP, I'm going with Pryor because of what he's
totally fair.
The position he's holding right now with the injuries to Coleman, you lost Josh Gordon. You just wonder where you would be right now at wide receiver if he had not emerged as this top receiver. I think what he did week 3, filling that kind of do-it-all role, helped make the transition easier on Cody Kessler and
sure.
Then gave him more confidence out there. And he's been able to adjust in that when he was out there with Robert Griffin III, he was a big deep threat. Now he's getting short, intermediate routes and getting separation from DBs in that aspect, and I think he's adjusted well. And I'm just anxious to see what he can do with Corey Coleman back out on the field and just getting this team on the same page for multiple games in a row. So he's just impressed me enough where I've got to go to that point. Isaiah Crowell a close second, but it's almost like the running game as a whole needs to be recognized because I think Duke has played nicely off Crow as well and gotten some big yards as well.
Yeah, I think that, you know, both of those guys were people that we nominated. Another person I mentioned was Joel Bitonio, who I think is having a pretty much a flawless season at left guard and has been instrumental in the ground game, especially on a lot of those power plays where he pulls to the side. All right, rookie, we both went with Corey Coleman, even though it was a brief flash. The flash was very bright for us. Obviously, a lot of ways you could go on that one, Grips.
Yeah, I'm going with Corey Coleman just because I'm projecting
unanimous
toward the end of the
unanimous
season. But what we've I'll bring up another name who's filled a huge role that many people aren't talking about is Derek Kindred.
He was actually a couple of our listeners.
And I think he's been just solid at that position. Not a ton of flash to him, but a huge hitter that has filled the void nicely with Ibrahim Campbell out and also gotten a bunch of snaps when both of those guys were healthy as well. So I'll be you get Ibrahim Campbell back, I'm interested to see what the makeup of the safeties are. The past years for the Browns, those guys have both been on the field the entire game, never missing a snap. Now you have the luxury to kind of rotate each of those guys in and potentially play three of them all at the same time out there.
Yeah, Kindred has been very, very good. Coleman, you know, Nassib has flashed. We mentioned Kindred. Cody Kessler could make the case. This is a guy who's come in and started two games.
You're
at the
talking
most
about filling
position,
a void. Yeah.
And filled a void.
Kindred filled a void.
I think if the award included preseason, you're probably going with Nassib, but we just need to see more of it once he gets back
sure.
And healthy and gets back out there.
Are you surprised that of all the guys, the one rookie that, you know, you didn't even – okay, so you went – we mentioned just here, Coleman, Nassib, Kindred, Kessler. We have not mentioned Emmanuel Ogba, who has been healthy and has been playing the whole time, but he hasn't really done a whole lot thus far.
He's been I think he's been solid, though. Like I think a couple games, he drew a holding call last week. He could have drawn a couple more in that Ravens game that went unnoticed. He's getting in position, but I feel like he's a guy that has not been a liability on defense. I just think it's going to take some time for him to kind of adjust to – he was moved around a bunch during training camp. I'll be interested to see how he develops going forward. Maybe he's a guy like an Orchard from last year that just needs that one big play to kind of really get going. But I'm seeing him bring pressure on a lot of plays, just not getting home there right away at the end there.
And a question for you, Nathan, is how is he grading out? Because I know you refer to Pro Football Focus an awful lot. You know, where is he grading out? Because I think, you know, we've all said time and time again, you know, Danny Shelton's played probably the three or four of his best games, you know, as a pro in a row to start this football season. But yet he doesn't have the sack. He doesn't have the tackle for a loss. He's just being disruptive in his role. Is Emmanuel Ogba doing kind of a similar job in his same role?
Right.
According to Pro Football Focus, Emmanuel Ogba is graded at a plus 0.9, so a solid grade. He is, though, however, at the bottom for edge rushers. He's at the bottom of the league. I think he's one of the bottom five in terms of pass rush productivity. Okay. So he's not getting home or getting near the quarterback a lot, but he's holding up very well. They like him in the ground game. He's done a good job there, 12 tackles, 6 run stops. And on the season, he's got 2 quarterback hits, 4 quarterback hurries. But you obviously want to see a little bit more than that from him. But I think he's a guy, you're right, that has to adjust a little bit to the NFL game. And people keep telling me once he realizes how good he can be, that's when the sky is going to be the limit for Emmanuel Ogba. Most improved is one that I think you could go with 100 guys on this team, because I think there have been a lot of improved guys. But who would you go with there, Gribbs?
It would probably, if I'm forgetting who I voted for MVP, I'm probably going with Terrell Pryor based on where he was at this time last year. But I will go with Isaiah Crowell on this one, because I think the blocking scheme is certainly – I think the blocking has been better this year, bar none, in the running game. I think the scheme fits him better. But what I saw last week in Washington was his best running performance of his career with the Browns. I think the play before the Malcolm Johnson fumble might have been one of his best. Catching a pass, which is something that he was not known for the first couple years, caught a pass, made 3 or 4 guys miss, and powered through for a very important – what was going to be a very important first down there inside the red zone. I just think he's running with a different sense of purpose and has truly emerged in a league where running backs are becoming less and less a focal point, less and less superstar status. He's now he's been one of the top 5 running backs in the league, and it's hard to argue against that right now.
I think you're right. For most improved for you, Matt Wilhelm.
Most improved for me, I would say Christian Kirksey. Just his ability to be around the football, from going from a part-time player to becoming a full-time starter. And one thing that I thought was going to kind of swallow up a guy like Christian Kirksey, because he's a lean kind of coverage guy, was being able to play the run. And I think there's multiple times almost in every football game where he comes up, he attacks the line of scrimmage, he attacks the ball carrier, makes a tackle, you know, right at the line of scrimmage, or, you know, for a very short gain, you know, 1 yard, 2 yards. And I just like the way that Ray Horton's using him, moving him around, putting him in a situation that favors his athleticism. So he's a guy that's improved, because he's gone from, you know, maybe 20 to 25 snaps a football game, now playing 60 snaps a game.
Yeah, I think he's done a great job. I think that for me, most improved, Kirksey has really emerged. Crow, who you mentioned, Pryor, obviously, I think would be a lock
right,
for this
one. Right,
that's
the easy lock, yeah.
If you wanted to put him in there. Betonio, from where he was a year ago to where he is now, has shown significant improvement. But I'm going to go with Danny Shelton, because
sure,
Danny Shelton was a guy that, you know, you had as many concerns about as Cam Irving, frankly, coming into this season, and has actually played incredibly well for your team up front, and been one of the reasons that the Browns have been fairly stout at the point of attack relative to the expectation for this team.
And if we're going on the award most improved since preseason, it's probably a tie between Shelton and Cody Kessler.
Yeah.
Because I think there were some concerns raised by both during the preseason. Shelton was still adjusting to what they were wanting him to do, playing into the third quarter of some games where starters weren't going that far. And it's really just like the light switched on for both of them once they got into the regular season and really got thrown into it. And I think both – maybe Kessler has come farther from what we've seen in the preseason, but I think both have just been – surprises within the season based on what we saw in August.
I think you're right about that, and I think if we're also taking a step back, and for most improved, you could just say coaching staff. I just think the coaching staff from last year, this year, night and day, and what we're getting from a schematic standpoint, a game plan standpoint, a motivational standpoint, et cetera, week in and week out.
Now, Vegas says otherwise, but the one thing that I continually talked about all offseason was this football team and their coaches creating a scenario for themselves to walk into First Energy Stadium or go on a road trip, on a business trip, and have the opportunity to win a football game. Now, we do sit 0-4, but you're lying to yourself as a Browns fan, as a Browns hater, to believe that we have not been able to control our own destiny in any of these football games. Up 20-0, should have been 21-0. You know, if we make that kick at Baltimore, we miss the kick in Miami, and then, you know, the fumble that kind of led to the, you know, next 18 minutes of that football game to fall in the favor of the Washington Redskins. So it's that fifth, walking into the stadium and knowing we can win this football game. And I think that onus falls on these coaches, motivating these young men and getting them to buy into the game plans that they put in, like right now, Monday night. You know, you've kind of turned the page on that loss against Washington and dive into the film and dive into the Patriots and dive in today and have the, you know, a lot of veterans who I've seen in here. I'm not going to name names. I was going to here, but veteran players who play a lot of snaps for the Cleveland Browns, I have seen in this building recovering their bodies and soaking in the game plan that these coaches create. And I think that gives us an opportunity to be in every football game.
I think the key difference, too, is that even though you are 0-4, this team has dealt with so much injury adversity early in the season. Whereas I saw someone make the comparison last year. The Browns were in a lot of games early last season, but they weren't dealt the injury adversity that they had been handed early in the year. It came later in the year, and that's when things really started to spin out of control last year with some really lopsided results. But they've kind of hung together, and I think an example of the good coaching you've seen here, and I think Hugh brought this up yesterday, the fact that you can have a guy like Cam Johnson come from Arizona on Friday, plug him into the defense on Sunday. He's familiar with it, of course, being here in training camp. But for him to be on the field and make an immediate impact with two sacks, that's them putting
like
players in place to make plays.
Corey Lemonnier's coming at the 53-man cut.
Body
Calhoun, Tyrone Holmes, Gabe Wright, all of these guys have come in and made impacts quickly for this team, and I think a lot of that has to do with coaching. So biggest surprise, I think we've covered it in a lot of different ways, whether it's Terrell Pryor, who I think is, you know, what he's been able to do, whether it's Crow being the second leading rusher in the NFL, whether it's the Browns just in general being the leading rushing team in the NFL. I think those are all big surprises. For me, the fact that the guy we saw in preseason and Cody Kessler has been able to be the quarterback on the road against Miami and Washington, and the Browns were certainly in position to win both of those games, is as big a surprise as anything to me this year.
And I'll go with an interesting one, just an odd one, but overall, the numbers might not back this up. I just think I feel way more confident in the defense as a whole through the quarter part of the season than I thought I would at this point, because I think it was rough in the preseason. There's been stretches where there's drives where teams just roll down the field. But a lot of other series, they're hanging tough. They're forcing turnovers at a higher rate. The fact that last year's DBs had 5 interceptions all year, and there's already 5 interceptions from DBs this season through the first 4 games with a new-look secondary, I think that has been a surprise to me, because I thought this was going to be a team that was really going to have to lean on its offense. But now it's just now getting a defense that can play a full 4 quarters. I think that's the next step for the defense. But they've already played at a better level than I thought they were going to at this point.
No, I think that's really fair. And I wanted to add one more category to this, something we haven't talked about yet. But take away draft picks, best offseason acquisition. Ooh. For me, while you guys ponder that, I think obviously Stephen Pi has come in and I think played at a very, very good level. But Jamar Taylor has come in at a time when, you know, it was supposed to be Joe Hayden and Tremon Williams. Tremon's banged up. Then it was supposed to be Kaywan was the nickel. He's gone already. Justin Gilbert was the first-round pick a couple years ago. He was supposed to be at. He's gone. Jamar Taylor's starting and has played the only corner that's played every snap. Had some tough matchups. He's now got an interception in each of the last 2 games and is starting to play, I think, better. And I think without Jamar Taylor on this team right now, you know, you already have Breann Body Calhoun getting in their light. You'd have Tracy Howard. You don't know what would be happening at the cornerback position. I think he's come in, former second-round pick, really embraced this opportunity, and I think for the most part has played well for this Cleveland Browns football team.
See, and I'll throw out the DeMario Davis signing just because I think that, you know, this team has so many young players, and they needed a presence like him in the locker room. I think this is kind of an intangible thing.
I think you're right.
Even though you already had a veteran in Joe Hayden on that defense, I think you just needed another one, whether it was on either side of the ball, a very vocal leader that guys kind of rally around. They're always mentioning what he does from a leadership standpoint. I think that's kind of a special characteristic he has in his game. And I think that Hugh Jackson's mentioned repeatedly throughout the first 4 weeks is that they have good veterans in the locker room that are kind of holding this together right now as they go through, for a lot of these players, more losing than they've experienced in their college career. So I think it was key to get him in there and kind of stabilize a really young defense.
I agree with that. And I think, you know, if you look at our starting defense and you remove DeMario Davis, who would be that voice? You know, I know Joe Hayden's a captain, but he's not the vocal, intimidating leader. You've got 2 new starting safeties. You've got another rookie who started a couple games at safety, Jamar Taylor, who's new to this organization as well.
It'd have to be Kirksey, which would be tough.
And outside of his element as well. You know, I think, you know, for Christian Kirksey, 2 years from now is going to be DeMario Davis. having played next to DeMario Davis for 2 or 3 years, you know, and in the right standing in this organization to be that guy, to be that alpha, because as play backs that up, by that same time, he will probably have solidified, if that's a big if, and I'll put my air quotes in on a radio show, it's, you know, he's rewarded with a second contract here in Cleveland. You know, responsibility comes with those second contracts, whether you like it or not. Whether you can be a soft-spoken individual, people look to you when your play is great on the football field and an organization reflects that by awarding you an opportunity to get a significant amount of money via second contract. So, but, I mean, yeah, Danny Shelton, maybe, but still, second-year player, who else would it be? You know, so I think it's a godsend that DeMario Davis has come here, but for him to be the person that he is and the leader that he is, even though his play, I think, has been good, not great.
Yep.
It's who he is that means the most to us at this point right now through 4 games.
No, I think that you are right about that. I think that, you know, he's a guy that's come in, kind of settled things and been that vocal leader on the defensive side of the ball. By the way, we're going to talk with John Costco from Pro Football Focus when we return. The top 4 graded players on the Browns defense from Pro Football Focus through the quarter point of the season. Number 1, Danny Shelton. Number 2, Stephen Paya. Number 3, Joe Hayden. Number 4, Chris Kirksey. Those are your top 4 graded Browns thus far on the defensive side of the ball. Gribbs, what's coming up right now at ClevelandBrowns.com and the Browns mobile app from the written word?
Just posted a little bit ago, but a frame-by-frame breakdown of Terrell Pryor's first career touchdown from Sunday, showing a lot of different things that were working in that direction. But I think the most underrated part of that entire play is probably the throw that Cody Kessler makes on that play, because he's got Trent Murphy just up in his grill out of nowhere by the time he makes that throw. And he had to hear the noise before he realized it was going to be in Terrell Pryor's hands for that. So I think that a really good third down throw from Kessler kind of highlights what was a really good route and everything by Terrell Pryor.
And it was cool. It was a 2-man route, pretty much a max protect. Only guys out there were Pryor and Hawkins, and even though Pryor was double-teamed, Kessler found the way to get in there, and as you're right, he stood in there and took a big hit from a free runner. Probably the best throw of his young career. His first touchdown as a passer, and Terrell Pryor's first touchdown as a receiver.
Yeah, he also sold the fake, which maybe bought him about another half second on that throw as well. So I think he's got some really good poise about him. I think there's some restrictions, obviously, in his throwing, but I think that you couldn't have asked for much more out of these first 2 games just based on the circumstance he's been thrown into.
No, I think you're exactly right about that. All right, when we come back, we'll open up the phone lines, 216-578-0850. John Costco at 2 o'clock, Terrell Pryor, 215, here on Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
There ain't no secrets anymore.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm. Matt, did you know the last time the Patriots came here to Cleveland, they lost 34-14 in 2010?
Who was their quarterback?
Was that not Brady? Was it Matt Castle?
I'm asking.
I think it was Brady, wasn't it?
I think it was. So you're telling me there's a chance.
It was Tom Brady. He was 19 of 36 for 224 yards and 2 touchdowns on the day.
So you're saying there's a chance.
The last meeting, of course, was the 27-26 thriller. Brady threw for 418 yards. That was in Gillette Stadium. Lifetime, the Patriots are 4-8 in games played in Cleveland. However, they have won 5 of the last 6 meetings. That lone loss, actually 2 losses out of the last 7. So they're 5 out of the last 7, both in Cleveland in 2000. And 2010, going to be a very difficult matchup, obviously, for the Browns with this team. Features 2 of the best rushing attacks in the NFL. The Browns, number 1. The Patriots, number 3 at 135.5 yards per game. So that's going to be the matchup. We know that. Patriots and the Browns, obviously, this Sunday. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Free agent acquisitions. I mean, it's nice to say that, you know, a couple of those guys paying dividends. Talked about DeMario Davis already. Paya came in late. He has Jamar Taylor, that draft day trade, sort of an innocuous thing. They got it for moving basically over a few spots down in the 7th round.
Right. And even furthermore, because some people might go back and say, oh, you made some free agent splashes. The guys came in 2014. Dante Whitner, Carlos Dansby, and played very well for the Cleveland Browns. The difference is those guys were at or over the age of 30. Whereas Stephen Paya, DeMario Davis, and these guys that we've signed, I mean, Corey Lemonnier, these are somewhere between 24 and 27-year-olds, if I'm not mistaken. Guys that are potentially just haven't found their way. Jamar Taylor or another situation like that hadn't found his way in another place, but fits who we are and could be this could be a place of projection for them where they're catapulted into a situation to become a solid NFL football player.
I think one of the things that is a positive that you can take away from that Redskins game as well is you look at the back end of the secondary. You started a rookie, one rookie safety. You had Jordan Poyer. You also had Brian Body Calhoun starting. You had Jamar Taylor with Joe Hayden going against the number one pass tech in the NFL, held them to less than 200 yards passing, and held that offense, the number one offense in the NFL, to 300 yards of total offense in that game.
Right,
which was a surprise, especially because they had walked down there and they had 14 points before you knew what was going on.
Correct. But, I mean, the issue was, you know, safeties and linebackers on Jordan Reed. Our inability to stymie who he was. Because DeSean Jackson had, the one catch for 5 yards or something of some sort. Had the big pass interference penalty, which we knew they were going to take their shots down the football field, and that was one of their shots, and it worked in their favor. It might as well be a 50-yard reception. But Jordan Reed was the guy who beat us up in situations where you'd like to have a vet safety who's great in man-to-man coverage or a linebacker who can beat up a Jordan Reed and at least get color on a color so that Kirk Cousins comes off him and makes a throw to a different wide receiver.
Yeah, DeSean Jackson, one catch, 5 yards. Did have the big pass interference penalty, though. But, I mean, you think about it. Jordan Reed, he still didn't hurt you. Yes, he scored the 2 touchdowns, 9 catch, 73 yards, 8 yards a catch. Garcon, 9 yards a catch. Crowder, 10 yards a catch. DeSean Jackson, 5 yards a catch. Davis, 8 yards a catch. So your tight ends and receivers were all 10 or fewer.
Right, but
here's
the thing, and I think, you know, Washington must have been content from a game plan standpoint against the Cleveland Browns to just take what's there.
Yeah, they went 50-50 run-pass split for the first
time. Right, but my whole point was is, you know, Matt Jones had his best game running the football, and it's, you know, the game dictated it, you know, getting out 14-0 for them to run the football and be a little bit more patient and shorten this football game. You saw them only take a couple shots down the football field, whereas you and I talked last week, and we thought that'd be a big part of who they are. Maybe Jordan Reed, you know, getting, you know, behind the linebackers in front of a safety on an over route of some sort where you can get the yards after the catch. DeSean Jackson, you thought shots would come, but they were content taking what was there. And that's where, you know, my mind goes. And I'm just, you know, trying to be a bit pessimistic in saying that. Did they have an understanding or see something in some of our zone coverages to just be okay with getting 6 to 7 yards and a completion and continuing to, you know, plot the ball down the field, you know, throughout the football game? Because, I mean, as you look at their drives, you know, two of their scoring drives, I think they had 3 drives of 10 plays or more. Two, I believe, that went for 14-play drives.
They had a 12-play drive.
A 12-play for 85. And then an 8-yard for eight-play drive for 30 yards and a 10-play for 80 yards. But then the Cleveland Browns, outside of those, really made them work for their yards.
Yeah, they had a 10-play 42-yard drive.
Correct.
Mixed in there as
but
well.
But I just meant, like, Washington's game plan must have been just let's take what's there and not – and I think in the first couple games, let's get down the red zone and take what's there and get our opportunities to score, whereas Kirk Cousins might have got, you know, a little – sketchy with the football and thrown it to the other team, which I believe that you said was true. What, 1 touchdown, 3 interceptions at home through the first 2 home football games for the Redskins, where they just wanted to protect it, and chunk and like kind of like dink and dunk themselves into the red zone, and they were able to convert, whereas first 3 football games, they weren't converting in the red zone really at all.
Well, and you talk about dinking and dunking, and that's really what Kirk Cousins did. Kirk Cousins in the game against the Browns, because they don't count as official stats, but he did have the 2 deep balls that resulted in the pass interference penalties. Other than that, he attempted 4 passes of more than 10 yards in the air out of his 27 attempts.
Which is actually, if I'm not mistaken, less than Cody Kessler attempted, correct?
Much fewer in this game.
Okay.
Yeah, much fewer in this game. Cody Kessler attempted 7 passes of more than 10 yards in the air. So, yeah, they did. They were just checking it down and taking what the defense was giving them, and the Browns certainly were in a position to win that game. We're going to go further inside the numbers, and we're going to have John Costco from Pro Football Focus with us when we return to kick off our second hour here on CBD. If you have any Pro Football Focus-related questions, let us know. 216-578-050. Tweet me at Nathan Zagura, at Browns_Daily. We'll go inside the numbers with John Costco.